SBS Radio.
I'm Bertrand Ngandame on NITV Radio. My guest is Auntie Del Chapman, a chef, an advocate of ancient foods and traditional well-being. Auntie Del Chapman is also the owner of My Dilly Bag, an Aboriginal corporation that works sustainably with Indigenous communities that grow and harvest bush taka or native ingredients. We discuss how Auntie Del Chapman managed not only to keep My Dilly Bag running during the COVID pandemic, but also how she's taken the business on a global stage, expanded it, and even brought on board more staff. We begin our conversation exploring how Auntie Del brought her business from the physical world where it was operating predominantly to the cyberspace.
I've had to be on a big learning curve and work out how to even do what we're doing right now in Zoom. I've never done it before. So I think it's a really good way to get to a lot of people. It seems to be working for us. We have an online store, so people are able to go online to My Dilly Bag and purchase our bush foods and our books and things like that. I've just had to, as I said, just pivot the business and change direction a little bit. But I think all for the better.
Yeah, your business has been around for 20 years and now all of a sudden transitioning to from face-to-face traditional way of doing business, especially dealing with traditional foods and traditional long cultures that have been around for many years and just going into the virtual world. Was it a very quick transition or it's taken you some time to gradually build it to the online space?
No, it all happened within a period of about 3 months. It happened quite quickly. So I was in the middle of actually doing the website and upgrading it and putting in a shopping cart and things like that when the restrictions really hit then. And that's when we decided that we needed to do virtual cooking classes and more online webinars and things like that.
Yeah, but food is something that you have to see and touch and feel, smell and all that. And you have really ingredients that are unheard of for many of us. I just looked at your website, mouth-watering photographs, but then you have to see them and touch, feel, taste to actually really appreciate the whole experience.
Yeah, you do. I think we just got to be a bit creative in letting people know the uniqueness of our flavours and bringing out recipes and having people, have the opportunity to actually experience it then, you know. And what we've found is our sales have actually increased online because people are buying them all over, you know, Australia nationally, but also internationally. So it's just been a really good way to get the information out there to people and for us to even think a little bit more creative in what we do. So our chefs are having to sort of come up with new innovative ideas.
Your business has been around for more than 2 decades now, but how have your suppliers, because I guess some of them are just small suppliers, how have they adapted? How have you managed to bring them along to catch up with the growing demand and the new space that you're working in?
I think, as you said, 2 decades of being in business and building those relationships with my suppliers, I think that's one thing that really keeps us together is being able to have a good relationship with your suppliers, but also just being at the pointy end too, I think, of, you know, knowing what's coming up in the future. And we go along and create new dishes using the new ingredients that are on the market, that are all going to be on the market. And I think that, as I said, it's that relationship that you build up with your suppliers and continued respect for one another, I think, in the industry.
Yeah. And the supply chain, is it following when you order your ingredients? Do you get them on time? Any disruptions that you've noticed?
You would probably be able to ring up and it would be here within 3 days. Now we have to look at, you know, a 5 to 7 day turnaround, so a little bit longer. As a business person, you just need to be a little bit on it, you know, and understand that there is going to be some slow movement in the freight. But generally, my suppliers are keeping me up to date very well. Yeah.
And you also give talks. Well, previously it used to be face-to-face, but now going online. How is the public accepting of it, and how have they responded?
They're responding really well, actually. I think they enjoy, you know, you being in the comfort of your own home as well. And when we run a webinar where we've got a cooking class or something, we go live and people then can interact with us anyway. So I think it's all a learning journey for all of us. We're finding it quite inspiring in lots of ways to look at how to capture our audience and keep them there. And, you know, we have no problem in educating people. I think that's it. It's the education that comes along with our classes.
I saw on your website you've got, like, probiotic plant-based cheese workshops, native sourdough, native sustainable seafood, which looks like green caviar to me. It looks really mouth-watering and fantastic. And Aboriginal Australia's bush tucker. Which ones are the most successful ones or the most popular ones out of all those workshops?
Well, I actually get a lot for the Indigenous workshop, the Aboriginal workshop. People really are wanting to understand how unique it is and how many flavours are out there and how they can best put that into their everyday cooking. And I think that's sort of been our little secret about how we can help people use those products. Because if I can't help someone utilise the lemon myrtle or, you know, the native pepper, etc., how am I going to get repeat sales, you know?
Yeah.
I want people coming back to us and using our product all the time. And I think what we do well too is we have, because we have a smaller supply chain than some people, businesses, we're able to keep our product very fresh. The aromas, the flavours, you know, the quality of our product is very, very good. And that's why I have developed my own supply chain and working with Indigenous and non-Indigenous farmers and communities to make sure that we keep that consistency of quality all the way through.
Now that your business is growing global, where do you see the biggest growth happening? In Australia, overseas, where's the biggest growth for your business?
Well, at the moment, it's definitely Australia because I think with the lockdowns and the restrictions, people got the opportunity to stay in their own home and learn about bush foods right here and then across Australia. The beauty of Zooming and, you know, webinars, etc., is that you can do that and you can come in and out at any time you like to start a program. In Australia, I get a lot. I know Victoria's in very hard times, but we get a lot of people from Victoria. I send a lot of mail down there, a lot of products. So people obviously are looking for an escape, you know, something for them to do and learn about Aboriginal Australia.
Have you seen your business expand in terms of workforce, or it shrunk?
No, we've I used to do everything, and now I've got a little team of four. And so, yes, we've increased because our sales are increasing. I'm getting, I think too, with the social media platforms that we're on, I have to employ someone to do that because that's not really my forte. We've grown the business with employees over the last 3 to 5 months, 6 months.
The talk now is, especially here in Melbourne where we are experiencing a lockdown, or even up in Queensland where international travel, even domestic travel, is restricted. Most businesses rely on tourism. That part of business has dried out. And employment is just everyone's concern. People have lost, thousands have lost jobs. And great to hear that you've actually hired in this time. of pandemic and in the hospitality industry. It's
So we're opening a store in November. So we're going to have a place in Forest Glen on the Sunshine Coast where people will be able to come in, and we're looking at it's like a cellar door, so people will be able to come in and partake of tastings of native produce and teas and drinks and things like that, native drinks, and we're going to have a range of Indigenous plants for sale, a retail store, and I work with small businesses who don't really have a platform yet. They haven't been able to build a space online. So I have Aboriginal artisans who might be making jewellery, painting chopping boards, making jewellery, doing a whole range of well-being workshops and things like that. So we have people who I then showcase in the store, and we'll have a rolling calendar throughout the year where you're able to come in and book and come and speak with those artisans and do some workshops as well.
When is that due to open?
Yeah, we're hoping to open about mid-November, but definitely be opened in December for the Christmas holidays.
Yeah, and coming back to bushtaka and traditional foods, some are very commonly known, and they're part of when you go to a patisserie, one of the things you might find that's become more and more common is things that with lemon myrtle, that's very common. Finger limes are also becoming a little bit more mainstream. What other foods are you discovering that are getting a lot of traction nowadays?
Well, we have this beautiful curry myrtle. So there's the lemon, there's the anise, there's the rose, there's the cinnamon. But the curry myrtle, I find, is very, very unique. And it's as it oxidizes, it becomes stronger and stronger, and this beautiful curry goes yellow, and it. We've got it as a freeze-dried form, and I don't know whether there's too many other organisations or businesses out there that actually do the freeze-dried, but it's rather intense, and little bits goes a long way when it comes to native ingredients, so you don't need a lot to get the flavour and to get the punch. The other ones that we're working on, we've brought out, we've got some native or bush lollies. So looking with lemon myrtle and anise myrtle, we've got some little bush lollies that are pretty unique to the sector. The other ones that I really like is a native turmeric, which is very different to, the turmeric that we all have, that you all know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different native foods now that are being starting to be commercialised and becoming quite sought after because of their nutritional and their nutraceutical components, what they can be used for in the medicinal area.
That's what I was going to come to, because some of the native plants have a really very high nutritional value. Like recently we just learned that the Kakadu plum has the highest actually vitamin C component of any plant in the world. Educate us on some of the plants that are out there in a few words that we need to know and to know about.
There's some nice melaleuca, like paperbark leaf, really lovely seeds. I recently was unwell and had the flu and things like that, and I'll grab the melaleuca tea. I put them in a big pot and boiled them up, and instantly it was, you had a cup of tea and you automatically knew that it was releasing everything in your chest and your nose, and you're starting to breathe again, and it was just a phenomenal. I highly recommend it. There's things like our pepper berries from Tasmania, high in antioxidants, and they're anti-inflammatory. So there's so many good things out there, and we're yet we've only just touched the surface. You know, we're only scratching the surface of what actually is out there. There's that, I don't know whether you've heard about the bloodwood, which is a tree in far north Queensland, only grows in far north Queensland. No. It's been used to kill cancer on and tumours in the veterinary area. It's been used with animals that may have a tumour and things like that. And it just totally turns it sort of like to jelly and then it just drops off. So there are human trials being done at the moment. So,
yeah.
You know, there's opportunity there for all of us to benefit from Australian native foods and ingredients.
An untapped market. Now, before I let you go, is there anything you'd like to add, something I may have forgotten to ask and you'd like to add to the conversation?
One of the things that I was a part of last year in Sydney was the group of about 120 Indigenous business owners in the bush food industry came together in Sydney and formed a Indigenous led bush food symposium. We've now formed that into an organisation, a Bush Food Alliance. I think you could, you know, people keep their eye out for that. This is something where Indigenous people are going to play a role in what's been handed down to them from their ancestors for hundreds of thousands of years. And as we all know, Indigenous people within the bush food industry only make up 1% of the industry.
One last question that should have probably been the first one. My dilly bag, why that name? Where does it come from?
The dilly bag is something that Indigenous men and women would have carried or do carry around. So it's like a shopping bag, you know. When we think about it, we all carry our handbag, our shopping bag. So Aboriginal people, dilly bag was made from different fibres and different environmental fibres that were in their community. Some were made from hair and woven. Some were made from lamantra grass and that sort of thing and different barks. And it was a bag that they carried with them, which connected as they walked along. They collected their berries, they kept their fire starters in there, their ochres. It was a purse. It was the bag. And I thought of the dilly bag many years ago because to me it was something that we can all have and all share by having our dilly full of all these good things. And take it along with us on our journey.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.